Okay, so first question, let's just take some administrative stuff. Last we had a snow day, so there was no, like, I didn't think I could take the class and discovered it was canceled. Okay, sorry about that. But I just closed it. So as far as administrative stuff goes, today is the next to last class of the semester. There's two things that you guys have left in your life as far as this course goes. One is the project and one is the exam. Okay, let me give you a brief about the project. The last day of classes is Thursday, and I said you could turn it in on Friday if you wanted. I'm going to change this a little bit in the following way. I'm not going to be here on Friday. Okay? So I would very much like to see the projects turned in on Thursday if possible, but realize that some of you were banking on Friday. So the story that I will give you is the following. If you turn it on Thursday, you will make me happy. Okay? And this happiness might convert into some form of brownie points. Okay? I won't say that in an explicit way. But if not, you can turn it into my mailbox as of, actually, you could actually have it late as the time of the final, okay? But I would be very happy if you turned it in as of Thursday, okay? So when I'm looking at grading these things, I want to be able to, I'm going to be leaving town on Thursday evening. We'd like to be able to take a bunch of these to be graded. And so if you have it, if you think you're almost going to be done by Thursday, get it done by Thursday. Okay? So I'd like to be able to compare two projects, be able to say, well, this one is garbage. This one is garbage, but was turned in on Thursday. And so rate that one higher as a result of that. Okay? Any questions about the grading policy or the desired tactics? Okay. How many people will have them pass something for me to turn it in class on Thursday? Okay. You're going to also have exams during exam week. That's one thing to remember, is that during exam week is when you have exams. Okay. That's always a busy time, including one in here. So if it's at all possible, I would like to get it on Thursday. We'll see if it's possible. Again, remember those brownie points. Okay. You can't collect enough brownie points in life. Okay. Any questions?
How much?
They're extremely brown, is all I can say. They're brownie. Basically, if your project is almost done and you're going to be suffering through project, the final week, get it in on Thursday. Okay? If you tell me I haven't yet found my project topic, I was planning on doing that on Thursday night. Okay? Wait till turn it in the next time. Okay? Any questions? Okay? The other thing is, okay, and then next class we'll talk about the final. Any questions?
So we need to submit the source code.
Okay, so what I want to see for you to learn is a physical object, okay? This should be some kind of a printout of a report, and you have some code, you can give you some evidence that the code exists. Printing it out is a good way to do that. If there's something interesting that you have that you want me to run or something like that, I want you to mail me some kind of a tar file or something like that. Because what I want to really grade is a physical object, okay, a paper or something like that. Any questions? So every project should have some physical evidence that it was turned in, okay, and then I will go to the mail as appropriate. Any questions? Okay, good.
So what I'd like to, any other questions about anything? Okay, so what I'd like to talk about today, we've been talking a little bit, last class, which was last week, we started talking about evolutionary trees. And in particular, we talked about a particular type of tree that you might build from distance functions, distance measures. A class of trees we called ultrametric trees. Okay? And ultrametric trees had the property that they were rooted trees, and the leaves of the species of the ultrametric tree were the leaf nodes. And there was a path from leaf to root, okay? Each intermediate node had a number associated with it. And on every path from root to leaf, from leaf to root, the numbers went up, okay? these intermediate node measures could correspond to millions of years ago since the branching point happened. Okay? And if you interpret it that way, it makes sense that the numbers should decrease along a path. 3 million years ago, the A's separated from the E's. 5 million years ago, the AE species separated from the D species. Okay? 3 million years ago, B and C split off, and so on. So I think the notion of an ultrametric tree is a reasonable notion of an evolutionary tree. And last class, we saw that there was a reasonable algorithm to reconstruct it, a reasonably simple and reasonable algorithm to take as input a matrix where for every pair of species you know how many million years ago they split off, and construct an ultrametric tree that was consistent with that. Any questions? Okay, that's sort of basically by way of review. Okay, how did the algorithm work? Again, we actually, the basic idea was simple enough that we pretty much came up with our own algorithm on the fly. But the basic idea was that since the labels on the path from any leaf to the root are going to be followed by, basically it'll be going, the intermediate nodes are all going to represent, have a label associated with it. And they're going to be going up, okay, as you know, with respect to time as we get towards the root. We could sort the distances for any particular leaf. We could sort all the distances in that row of the matrix, okay, and that would correspond to the branching points for that that particular leaf. So, for example, for E, or let's say A, just because it's simpler, okay, because we have the numbers here. They were numbers 8, 5, and 3. So we know that the three branching points associated with A were 8, 5, and 3. Further, once we define that, each one of these branching points, all the other leaf nodes are partitioned into groups based on what their distance is. So we know that as far as A goes, there were two nodes that were labeled B and C. We can't refine this part of the tree yet. But basically what we're going to be getting from just analyzing the first row is a path in the tree and a cluster into different groups, subgroups. Then we can take further rows and refine each cluster. Okay? And by doing that, that would uniquely give us a tree. Any questions? So the first thing to see is that it is easy to reconstruct ultrametric trees. The second thing that should be clear is, and maybe not so clear, but we've implicitly it's proven by the algorithm, is that the reconstruction is unique. Okay? Why is it unique up to sort of flipping the each node, it's a rooted tree, so I mean we could display this tree with B and C, the B and C part to the left of the A, E, and D. That's not what we mean by a different tree. We mean that by ignoring sort of those flips, are the rooted trees identical, are the trees isomorphic to each other? And it should be clear that there is only one, at most one ultrametric tree associated with any data set. Why? Because each one of these partitionings, basically each time we do this partitioning, the decomposition of the leaves into sub-parts of the partition are unique. Okay, and by doing that, we are only going to come up with one such partition ultimately when we factor in all of those partitions. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Good. Okay, and as we had sort of worked out last class, reconstructing ultrametric trees are, algorithmically it's easy if your matrix is, in fact, perfectly ultrametric. But it gets more complicated, in a world where some of these numbers are not quite consistent with each other. Okay, we had a bunch of distance here, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8. All those 8s in that distance matrix corresponded to the distances between nodes on the left subtree and nodes on the right subtree. If we really looked at the species independently and got some estimate for how far apart they were, okay, we would have ended up with not 8, but 7.9, 8.1, something like that. And when you start factoring in noise, trying to account for this makes the problem much harder and messier than it is now. Okay, but it should be clear that with correct data, perfectly correct data, ultrametric trees are easy to reconstruct. Any questions? Okay, good. Let's now look at a somewhat different class of trees that you might hope to reconstruct from evolutionary data. Sorry, I've got a little bit of a sore throat there. But suppose, let's say, that we're dealing with unrooted trees.
Okay.
Again, it turns out, that, you know, that as we saw last class, there are something like n minus 3 times as many unrooted trees as there are rooted trees for a particular set of species. But let's say that we were given as input for every pair of species how far apart they were.
Okay.
Let's say that it measured the number of mutations, let's say, that had happened. Okay, that might, you know, we're analyzing a DNA sequence. We might have a measure as to what's the mutation distance between species B and D. Okay? And what we would like to have is, we know that between these species there were branching points. If we had an unrooted tree, we know how far apart the species are in distance. The question is, can we construct a tree where it has internal nodes and every edge has associated with a certain amount of distance, okay? And what we want to do is to explain these distances between species by the length of the path in the tree between those two species.
One thing that's true about trees, it's not true about general graphs, is that there is only one path between any pair of nodes in a tree.
Okay? Suppose, let's say, that in this case, the path from A to D is 2 plus 3 plus 4, that's 9, and lo and behold, the distance measure is 9. Okay? So what we'd like to do is take as input a distance measure matrix of how far apart every pair of species should be, and then try to reconstruct from it an unrooted tree such that the path lengths between the species exactly match what is intended in the matrix.
Okay. Any questions about that? Does that seem like a reasonable criteria? Okay. Okay. Does that seem like an easy or hard criteria to reconstruct from? Okay. Yes.
One reason why that wouldn't necessarily work. So the question is, could we have a star, okay, and have everything hang off as a star? I'm not claiming the answer is not necessarily. Well, wait, no. I mean, so we want to satisfy all the pairs of distances. Okay, so if you look at this thing, we are given n choose 2 distances on the n species. Okay, a tree has only n minus 1 edges. Okay, so it's not clear that every matrix of numbers can be represented by a tree. Okay. Well, the number of internal nodes you have, okay, the number of interesting internal nodes you have is going to be at most the n minus 1. Okay, let's think about this. Why? You have a tree with n leaves. The tree with on n leaves with the smallest number of internal nodes is presumably going to be a star, if you insist that all the individual species represent leaf nodes. Or we might have more intermediate nodes. I'll claim you can't have more interesting intermediate nodes than a binary tree, okay? And that would guarantee that you have at most n minus 2 or n minus 3 such intermediate nodes, okay? Does everybody sort of agree with that? You could add more intermediate nodes, split this 2 into a node of a path, 1 to here, 1 to the intermediate node, and then 1 from the intermediate node to the other node, but that would be meaningless, okay? The only interesting nodes are the branching nodes. The interesting thing is that it's not necessarily true that any matrix which is realizable by a tree is realizable by a star. Does everybody sort of believe that, or should we try to contradict that? Okay, let's take this particular data here. Is it possible to represent this data, okay, for this particular example, okay, by a star?
Have a star. The matrix that I see up there is 3, 7, 9, 6, 8, 6. And this is supposed to be, I guess, A, B, C, and this is supposed to be B, C, D, if I'm correct, right? Okay, so could we represent this data by a star? A to B. Okay, you have A, B, C. Oh, okay, let's relabel it. A, B, C, and D. Okay. From A to B, okay, is 3. Okay. My choice is to assume that all of these are integers. My weights, we can assume my weights are integers. My choices for this edge are basically to be 0, 1, 2, and 3. Right, because I know that I can't have the distance from A to the root be more than 3. Okay? If I fix that, the distance from A to B, this is going to have to be either 0, 1, 2, or 3. And it's going to be basically 3 minus whatever that edge is. Okay? On the other hand, I need to go, so in order to go from A to D, let's just think about this. From A to D, it's going to have to be equal to 9. So this edge is going to have to be greater than or equal to 6. There's one consequence of it, that being a star. Does everybody sort of agree with that? Can we make any other sort of bad consequences? We know that from here to here, this is going to have to be greater than or equal to 4. And if that's true, because in order to go from A to C, it has a cost of 7. I can't go from A to this node for a cost of greater than 3. If this is greater than 4, if this is greater than 6, this has to be greater than 10. And it isn't. Okay? So that's a proof that a star is not always realizable for all these distances. Okay? And in fact, it's not obvious to me how you would prove,
at least, you know, until I read the chapter, okay? It wasn't obvious to me how you would find such a tree, if one exists. Okay, this is, I think, a non-trivial algorithm problem. Okay, or at least not obvious at first how you might do it. Any questions about these additive trees? Okay, it's clear that the topology makes a difference, is what we've just proven. Okay, and that okay. So how can we find these additive? It should be clear that these additive trees are interesting, okay? If you assume that the idea that unrooted trees are interesting in evolution, okay, these additive trees seem to me to be quite a reasonable, unrooted tree. What about an ultrametric tree? If I had an ultrametric tree, okay, would an ultrametric tree correspond to additive weights? Well, I mean, you might think of it as being, well, look, if it's 3 million years ago from this to this, then the path length from here to here would be 6. Okay? And if it's 8 million years ago between this split and this split, the distance from here to here would be 18. Okay? 16. 2 times 8 is 16. And so you could imagine that given it's probably relatively easy to model an ultrametric tree problem by a additive tree problem. What's interesting, though, is that there is an algorithm to reconstruct additive trees using the fact that we know how to reconstruct ultrametric trees. Okay? So I'm going to go try to go through this algorithm a little bit. Does everybody sort of understand what the big picture problem is? If you're given data of the form, given pairs of, for all pairs of species, how far apart are they? Okay, and again, if you think of them as being, for example, mutations, okay, let's say that you could imagine that even though it's been the same amount of time since A and B split off from this ancestor, maybe this branch, for some reason, there were two mutations that had occurred in that time, rather than, and only one down this branch. Then, in fact, if we tried to compute the sequence distance between pairs, we would get something that should be modeled by an additive tree, okay, or something very close to it. Any questions? So how can we reconstruct additive trees, okay? My claim is that we can reduce this to the problem of reconstructing ultrametric trees, which is what we already sort of solved and solved that was easy. So what is the reduction? Well, first, suppose let's say that I want to reconstruct additive trees. The way that I'm going to show you how to reconstruct additive trees is as follows. I'm going to show you that if you had an additive tree for this measure, I can from that construct an ultrametric tree problem that if you solve the ultrametric tree on this new ultrametric tree problem, from that you could reconstruct the underlying additive tree. Okay? So how am I going to do that? Okay? Well, here is my, let's say that I'm given some data and I have the following additive tree associated with it. What I'm going to start to do is I'm going to take one of my leaf nodes that is happens to be on a longest path through the matrix, through the tree, okay, and lift that to be the root. So what is this particular tree here? This particular tree, if we look at it, is that better, I think? Yeah. In this particular tree, what is the longest path through that tree? Can anybody sort of look at this tree and gather which pair of nodes are the furthest pair apart? Okay, what is this? A and C. Well, A and C are how far apart? 9. Okay, A and B are, now you in principle would have to try all possible pairs, but that seems pretty reasonable to me. That, it's clear, I think a fairly quick, exhaustive search tells me that the longest path in this tree is from A to C. Okay? Suppose we take that additive tree, pick one of the leaf nodes on that longest path, let's say A, and make that a root. Okay? My node V is going to be the root that I have, the node that I lift up to the root. In this case, V is equal to A. And there's the maximum distance, MV, is the longest path in that tree. In this case, it's going to be 2 plus 3 equals, plus 4 equals 9. Okay? Suppose I take that node, lift it to the root, set that equal to 9, and then add to every other leaf node enough weight each leaf node is connected by exactly one edge to the tree. Suppose I add enough weight to that node so as to make the path from this initial, my root to all the other nodes equal. Okay? I claim that since there is only one path from the root to every other leaf, and there is only one edge from that leaf connecting it to the tree, there is a unique place where I can add weight so as to make the path distance from A to everybody else equal to 9. Okay? Does everybody sort of agree with that? Any questions? Okay? How many people have already tuned me out completely? Okay. Yes. How many people have not tuned me out completely? Okay, a few. Okay, one. Yes.
The left
jump
from the right jump. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that representative?
This left one is a representative additive tree for some matrix. I'm not showing you how to go from an additive tree to a ultrametric tree. Okay?
Are you assuming something like
answer like this, how is going to be similar to the tree or not?
Okay, no. So what I'm saying here is the following, that if you take a look, we want to now, what is the property that I want to do? I want to take this additive tray, and I want to create a rooted tray, such as the distance from the new root to every leaf is the same as the longest distance. Okay? So how might I do that? Well, the easiest way to do that would be to add the weight, right? I want to make it so that the path from A to every leaf is 9. We know that the path right now from A to every leaf is at most 9. I know that if I add weight on the edge from the leaf to the that connects it to the tree, that is only going to affect the path from the root to that leaf. So that's a safe place to add the weight. That's all that I'm saying. Okay? And so certainly I can find a way to add weight here to make all of that root to leaf path equal to 9. Does everybody agree with that? That should be obvious, I'm playing. Okay? Now, what I'm going to do is for every node in the tree, intermediate node, so again, in this particular case, the distance here was 4. If I add 9, make this path from root to leaf was 7. If I add 2 to it, now it's 9. I'm now going to assign each intermediate node in the tray the weight of the distance from, basically the weight of the distance below it. Okay? So for example, each edge from here to here, this is 4. Now this is 4. The distance, the value of this node is going to be 4. Okay? We know that every leaf is going to be a distance of, has a total edge that it has traveled on the way from that leaf to the root is 0. Crossing any edge is going to be, give the weight of that edge. And because of how we have normalized it, every node is going to have a unique value here. Okay? So what I'm going to now do is ensure, so then I'm going to assign every intermediate node, okay, the value of the largest weight, largest total distance below it. Okay? Here this was 4, this was 7, this was 9, the total weight from here to there. Okay? So what is interesting about these numbers? Does anybody see anything interesting about those distance numbers? What's interesting about them? Right, it's measuring how far is the longest thing from below it in the subtray to the, you know, from that node to the subtray. These are by definition going to be decreasing along those paths. Okay? And so these intermediate node values define the weights of an ultrametric tray. Does everybody sort of see that? Okay? So what I now want to claim is that we know how to, we now have an ultrametric tree problem. Okay? We know how to solve ultrametric tree problems. Okay? Ultrametric trees are uniquely reconstructed. If I gave you the ultrametric tree problem defined by this, what you call it? These numbers, the four, you know, this intermediate node 4, 7, 9, okay, and the separation of these species according to those numbers, I claim that you are doomed to get this tree back when you reconstruct it. And once you have that tree reconstructed, you can reverse the construction to get back the underlying additive tree. Okay? Yes. Okay, so there's a big problem that has just been uncovered. Okay? What is the problem? Here I have, I said that in order to, what I have successfully shown is that if you give me an additive tree for this problem, I can construct an ultrametric tree to reconstruct, whose reconstruction will give you that additive tree. Okay? Now what I have not shown you though, is how can you construct these matrix, again, this new matrix that you have to go from your input matrix to a new matrix. I have to show you how to construct that matrix without having the ultrametric tree, the additive tree in front of you. Then you have a correct algorithm. Yes?
I'm trying to use the grid, which is the grid. So yes. I'm
Okay.
What is this elementary tree represent?
Okay. What I'm going to claim now is that I've got a okay. So there's two problems now. The interesting problem I'm claiming is here that I am constructing a tree. I'm assuming I have the tree in order to construct the matrix. The other thing that you need to say, suppose I give you this ultrametric tree. From this ultrametric tree, it should be clear you have the topology of the underlying tree. Is that clear? Okay? That somehow that at the very least I'm giving you a new matrix, but I'm giving you a tree with the same topology as this tree. You have as input the original additive distance matrix. You have a topology, okay? I'll now say that once you have the topology, at the very least, you can try to puzzle it out with distances the way that we did it here, okay? So I'm not going to go through the details of how you go from the correct topology back to the distance measure, the distance values here, what the edge values are. But I'll claim that is relatively simple once you have the right topology. We were able to disprove the start topology couldn't have been right relatively easily. I'll claim that now if I give you a topology and I give you a distance metric measure, can you figure out whether this tree is realizable by that topology? I'll claim that is not a problem. Okay? Yes. Well, so what it is saying so what are we saying here? We have gone from an additive tree to an ultrametric tree. Okay? The ultrametric tree is unique, therefore the topology you get from your reduction is unique. Okay? It is possible there might have been more than one way to take this tree and convert it to an ultrametric, to an overhead. Let me just think this thing through for a second. Okay? Okay, right. So it is certainly true. Okay, well, that should still give me the same topology when I reconstruct it. Okay? So it may or may not be the case. I'm not sure I'm really willing to say one way or another. Okay? It may or may not be the case that the additive tree is unique. I think that might follow from the uniqueness of the ultrametric tree. Let me not commit to that. Any questions? The interesting problem, though, is the one that Esty pointed out, okay? That here in doing my reduction, I am doing it from a solution to the problem, okay? And that won't work. Does everybody sort of see where my fallacy is? I have shown you that given an additive tree, I can construct an ultrametric tree an ultrametric tree problem whose solution will give me back the additive tree, okay? But now I need to show you I can construct that matrix without actually having the tree. Okay? Any questions? So how might you do that? Well, now I need to compute the ultrametric tree matrix. Okay? Which means that for every two... What is the ultrametric data, basically? I need to now know for any pair of... distance for every pair of leaves, I want to now know what's the number of that intermediate node, correct? Without actually having this tree in front of me. Okay, and what is the value of that node going to be? I claim that it is going to be the distance from the root to the longest path minus the distance between those two the label of those two minus the distance from the root to the least common ancestor of those species. So look at what these distances are. A and B and C, the number in the ultrametric tree problem should be 7 between them. And what is 7? 7 is the weight of this unknown tree edge, 9 minus 2 is what 7 is. The distance between B and C, C and D in the matrix is 4. What is 4? Yeah? No. Let's say no. I didn't say that. Okay? But what I am going to say is that the distance here is going to be the again, what is the node value of this branch, this node? This is going to be the, we know that the distance from A to every leaf is going to be 9. We know that, therefore, the two nodes here have the same distance value. We've added enough weight so that up to the common branching point, they're basically going to be equal. The reason why this node has a weight of 4 is that is 4 is equal to 9 minus 5, where 5 is the distance from the root to that least common ancestor. Okay? Why is the value of this 7? Well, that's because here we know there's a distance of 2 from A to the common ancestor of this plus this. Okay? And so what I want to claim is you can reconstruct those distance values, the intermediate node values, if you knew the distance from the root to the least common ancestor of those two species. Okay? That's what I want to claim. Okay? This, I think, should be believable. Okay? If I could tell you what the distance from the least common ancestor of two leaves is in the additive tree to the root, okay, then I claim I can, it's basically going to be 9, the MV or 9 in this case, minus that distance is what the label of that node is going to be. Okay? So what I now need to show you is that given a pair of leaves in this tree, a pair of leaves, I can compute what is the distance between A, the root, and its least common ancestor without actually building the tree. Okay, if I can do that, then I can give you the additive matrix. The ultrametric matrix. Any questions? Yeah? Not the least common ancestor. I'd like to find out the distance. If you tell me the least common ancestor node, that's fine. What I really want to know is what is the distance from that least common ancestor to the root. Okay, and if I can do that, if you could tell me for every pair of nodes, what is the distance from the least common ancestor to the root, then I claim I can appropriately set the labels in my ultrametric tree, even without that tree, to start with. Okay? So what is the observation? Okay? The observation is that from my original matrix, my additive distance matrix, I know how far apart every pair of nodes are, at leaves are in my tree. Okay? V, let's say, is my root. I've set to be my root of my ultrametric tree problem. I and J are the two other leaves. And I'd like to figure out what is the weight I set to the intermediate node, okay, the least common ancestor, basically, between those two species. Can I figure out what the distance is from the root to this least common ancestor without actually having the tree? Okay? And I claim I can. Why? I'll claim that the distance from here, from the distance from the root to the intermediate node is going to be the distance from here to here plus the distance from here to here minus the distance from here to here. Okay, does everybody sort of see that? That if I want to compute what the length of this edge is, okay, in the induced subtree, you know, I delete all the other stuff. Okay, I'll claim that I know that I know the distance from I to J. I know the distance from I to U. I know the distance from J to U. Okay, I will claim that the distance from U to W. Okay. Twice the distance, okay, if I take this plus this minus this, I've added and subtracted this edge, added and subtracted this edge, counted this edge twice. And so from that now, I'll claim I can compute what this distance is from that unknown node point to the root. And by then stating that in the additive, in the ultrametric matrix, the distance that I'm going to get is going to be the longest distance from root to leaf minus, basically, this distance, okay, and that I compute in there. And given that, I can now compute the ultimetric matrix
without having the additive matrix. Okay?
And now I can solve the problem on the additive tree, on the ultimetric tree, and that gives me a solution to the additive tree. Any questions? Okay? Yeah. What is the distance from I to the distance from I to J in the tree? So here's again, if you look at our additive tree, we've got an edge-weighted tree. The distance between two nodes is the sum of the edges along that path. Okay? And so in this case here, again, the distance from here to here in the original tree would have been 6. Okay? Any questions? Okay. So bottom line, what's interesting about this is that additive trees can also be built from, we have an efficient algorithm to construct an additive tree if it exists. And it depends on the ultimetric tree algorithm, as we saw before. Any questions? Okay? So this is another well-defined class of evolutionary trees based on basically distance measures. Any questions? Okay. We were originally talking about evolutionary tree reconstruction. I'll claim that there are two different kinds of evolutionary data that we might have. One of them were distance matrices, okay, basically how far apart were each species. Representatives of those algorithms we solved using using the ultimetric and additive tree reconstructions. Another type of evolutionary data you have is all claimed with feature data, that you could define some sort of features that a given set of species, some of them have, some of them don't, okay, and build a matrix where the rows were the species, okay, and the columns were the features that the species had. And we sort of had the assumption that if you design your features right, certain features are very, very hard to evolve, okay? Again, one might say flies, okay? Knows how to fly, knows how to see, okay? Knows how to walk upright, okay? These may be complicated things to do, okay? And if you start out with a very, very simple organism that has no properties, no features, okay? As time goes by, in the course of evolution, it's going to, at certain either branching points, basically, okay, or not necessarily branching points, at certain points in the history of this organism, it's suddenly going to develop a new feature. Okay? Maybe we have two populations here. Originally we have one population of things, and half of them split off here, half of them split off here. This group learns how to play basketball, this group learns how to play football. Okay? They now have certain features here. Okay, but evolving those sports was something difficult. Okay, as time goes by, the basketball playing population has a splitting off event. Okay, and maybe it learns some other feature, like let's say knows how to fly. Okay, and now this subpopulation is marked by the fact that it plays basketball and flies. Okay, we would like to build a tree where, given a matrix of hard to evolve features, we'd like to build a tree where the leaf nodes are the current species. The edges are labeled with the events. When did this feature sort of evolve? Okay? Such that we minimize the number of times the evolution, the total features had to evolve. Okay? That, I claim, is a perfectly reasonable tree. So people talk about parsimony. Parsimony is something, as a word I'm used to thinking about having to do with people being cheap. Okay? You say somebody is parsimonious. That means that they're cheap. They don't like to spend money. Okay? We'd like to try to figure out if, let's say, each feature that evolves costs money somehow. We want to try to find the tree that explains all the features using the smallest number of evolutionary operations. Okay? And that, I claim, is a reasonable phylogenic tree problem to try to reconstruct. Any questions? Okay. Does everybody agree that that's a reasonable class of trees to want to build? Okay.
What is the input?
The input would be this feature matrix. Okay? So, I mean, what might these things be? Well, again, these are species. You've identified them as species. These are properties of the species. Okay? You can get these properties by observing them. Okay? Humans, 2 legs. Caterpillars, 100 legs. Okay? And you can have, you know, so does it have 2 legs might be a yes-no feature. Okay? And the goal would be to construct a tree such that we can explain these features using the smallest amount of evolution. Okay? The smallest amount of re-evolution. Okay? The smallest amount of feature sort of construction in some sense in the process. Yes?
Excuse me?
Okay, so right now the matrix that I'm doing here, I described it as a binary feature matrix, where basically 0 means you don't have the feature, 1 means you do have the feature. Okay? Now, you might imagine another situation, where a more general case, where for certain features you don't have yes-no data, but you have numerical data, like let's say number of legs. Okay, we have 2, cow has 4, caterpillar has 100. Okay? It might be that that you would like to have more general data here. Turns out the algorithm, that's a reasonable thing. As we'll see later, the algorithms get more complicated. We can do this for binary data in polynomial time. Beyond binary data, it starts to get much messier. Yes?
Is there a way to consider each different features and assign different weights to a
I see. So there are a couple of different questions about how you want to pose the problem exactly. One way would be to say that the general right way to do it would be given a matrix like this, perhaps with the features weighted by how important they are, find the tree that is cheapest in terms of the cost of evolving all those features. Okay? So you're saying, yes, the spinal cord is hard to evolve. So we're only going to, you know, so if you have the spinal cord evolving at 2 separate places, that would be very expensive. But flight is relatively easy to evolve, okay? And so if you have flight evolving among the insects and the birds and the humans, that's okay, okay? So it's clear that you can do such things. I claim that this problem gets to be very, very hard. Okay? Once you lose the assumption that every feature is that you ask the question, given a matrix, is it possible for those features to evolve only once? Okay? So I guess what I'm going to say is that you're right that the general problem you would like to live in is you have a lot of features, you have, you want to minimize the amount that they're rediscovered. Okay? If you have a small number of trees, you could, of species, you could construct all the trees and pick the one that is best. So if you're trying to tell among 10 species and you have some complicated criteria, that would certainly be reasonable. Okay? If you live in a world where you have lots and lots of species, okay, you need a clever algorithm if you hope to reconstruct whether it's minimal or not. I'll claim a special and interesting problem is the following, the perfect phylogeny problem. Basically says, given a matrix of the form where you have rows that are species and columns that are features, and a 0 means it did not have that feature, and a 1 means it did have the feature, and features evolve, get created, so you know the direction, that you started out like this and you ended up like that. The perfect phylogeny problem asks, is there a tree which explains that matrix where every feature is only evolved once? Okay? Any questions? Okay? It should be clear that this idea of reconstructing from features is interesting. It should also be clear that this is probably the simplest reasonable phylogenic tree problem. Try to explain all the features. Okay, but they're only allowed to evolve once. Any questions? Okay. So again, the thing to notice here is first of all that this is a edge-labeled tree. Okay, and that features do not necessarily contribute to a split. Notice, for example, that in this particular data, if I deleted feature 3, okay, I will claim that I would still have to end up with the exact same topology that I have here. Why is that? Because if you look at features 3 and 2, they're sort of complementary to each other, right? And so somehow that if you evolve, once we say, I'm first going to evolve off feature 2, it doesn't matter whether or not I have a feature 3 here. Okay? The data will still be explained by the trick. Okay? Any questions? We might also have a rule where multiple features are explained within one step here. Okay? There does not have to be necessarily a division in time, okay, in order to explain that. Any questions? Why might that be? Well, I'm used to thinking, that might be a little bit surprising. When I'm used to thinking about evolutionary trees, I'm used to thinking of anything interesting as contributing to a split. But it might have been that originally you had the population here, it learned how to walk, and once it learned how to walk, that was such an advantage, all the non-walkers died out. Okay, and so that everything from that branch became extinct, and you don't see any evidence of it. Okay? So the weights here are on edges, not on vertices. Okay? The labels here are on edges, not on vertices. Any questions? Okay? Any ideas how you might be able to solve this perfect phylogeny problem? Okay? Yes? Okay, so let's say, so there's two different parts to this question. One is to look at this matrix and say, is it explainable by a tree? The other is to actually give me the tree. Okay? So let's first, the simplest one is this matrix, does it explainable by a perfect phylogeny tree? How might you solve that problem? Okay? Any ideas? Okay? Any ideas of a part of a matrix that could not have a perfect phylogeny associated with it? Okay. What would be such an example? Yes. What are you saying? Okay, so you're saying that if you have a column where everything in this column has a feature, that gives you no information, but that's fairly easily explainable. Here you have a root. Okay, then this feature C will assign this node to be C and everything else is going to branch off from it. So a labeled column with all ones is not very interesting, but doesn't cause a contradiction necessarily to anything. Right? Okay, this somehow evolved from the very beginning of time. Okay? Yes.
Okay, one of these features had to have developed first.
Let's say without loss of generality, if the feature wasn't developed first. Okay? Species B hadn't been gone before species 1 developed, right? Everybody agree that somehow they over the main line. Species B does not have a feature, does not have the second feature. Okay? So take that back. Species C does not have the first feature. So it has to evolve or split off before feature 1 evolved. Does everybody agree with that? Now somehow feature 2 has to evolve, and A is very happy. Okay? But where are the species? Okay, so wait, so what do we have here? So here's A. Here's C. Where can B be? B only has feature. Okay, wait a minute. Let's take a look at the data. Sorry about this. So part of what we have here, we know that A has to have been sitting after feature 1 evolved and feature 2 evolved. Right? We decided feature 1 was first. Now, which species is happy? B is basically happy. Because it can sit over here. Okay? But now, where is species C? Species C cannot exist, right? Species C somehow lost this feature, but was split off over here and then it would have picked up that feature. Okay? So this, like, is a forbidden cell problem. Does everybody agree with that? This matrix can't be done. Okay? Yes. Okay, you can't. Provided you don't want to solve the perfect phylogeny problem. The perfect phylogeny problem asks for the case where you constructing these things and each feature only evolves once. Okay? So by definition, that's by definition for this problem. Okay? This is a simplified problem. This is one I know how to solve. You're saying you want the one that evolves the smallest number of features. Well, you can have it, but you have to find it. Okay? And I don't know how to find it. That starts to get to be an incomplete problem when you allow enough re-evolution of things. Okay? But I'll claim that the problem of where you ask does each feature evolve once, that problem can be easily solved. Okay? Any questions or comments? Okay? Yeah. Right. Okay. So what you're saying is that one other aspect of this problem that looks suspicious is that in fact that features sometimes get lost. Okay? You know, dinosaurs have the ability to scare people. Okay? Then mice descended from it and didn't have that ability. Okay? So it is quite possible that features get lost. Okay? And this problem, formalization does not allow for that. Okay? So that's another problem here. Implicitly, in this assumption, features are evolving, and they're evolving from nothing. So you talk about, you not only know for each feature that it evolved once, but you also know that in fact it evolved from which direction it went, from nothing to something. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So yes, we're putting on some fairly theoretical restrictions here. Okay? And the only thing that I have to offer you is that we know how to solve this case. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Fair enough. So what is the property that we have or that we want? Okay? Well, basically, as we sort of worked out on the board, a matrix has a perfect phylogenic tree if and only if, for every pair of columns, okay, the ones are either disjoint or one column contains the other. Okay? Notice that what happened here in the problem case, the ones are not disjoint. The columns are not disjoint. One column does not contain all the ones of the other as a subset. Okay? And they're not independent. Okay? Notice that if we lost
the first species,
notice that this would cause no problem. Because now the columns are, the ones are disjoint. Okay? The critical condition is
that they not be, that it will be a perfect phylogeny for every pair of columns, so one of this joins, okay, or one contains the other. Okay? And so I claim that that is actually the condition that you need. Okay? And once you have that condition, it should be fairly easy to construct an algorithm to test whether a matrix has this property. Okay? Namely, we'll compare all pairs of columns, okay, and ask, are they this, you have m squared columns. To test whether the ones are disjoint or one contains the other, you can do it a linear time pass through it. I claim in m squared n time, you can easily test if a matrix has this property. And in fact, you can do it a little faster. Any questions? Okay? So that tells us whether a matrix has the possibility of being a perfect phylogenic tree. But it did not answer the question of how you can build that tree. Okay? How can I go from that matrix to such a tree if one exists? You can now look at the matrix and say, yes, there is a tree, or no, there is not a tree. But how do we actually find the tree? Well, what's interesting is... Okay. I proved necessity. I did not prove sufficiency. Okay. I will claim that it is also sufficient, but that needs a proof. That definitely needs a proof. Any questions? Okay. So what am I going to do now? I'm now going to show you how you can reduce this perfect phylogeny problem back to this ultrametric tree problem that we know about. We know how to solve ultrametric trees. We talked about that. So what can we do? Here is an input to a perfect phylogeny problem. We have n species and m features. Okay? I will claim that we can now, from this, construct a matrix, an n by n matrix, corresponding to the number where the element ij is the number of features, of positively evolved features that those species have in common. Okay, namely how many ones are there, okay, in common between those two species. So let's look at 1 and 2. How many features does A and B, how many features does A and B have in common? If we look at this. Okay? I will claim that there are no positive features that they have in common, right? So the value from A to B is 0. How many features does, let's pick a better pair, or let's say A and E. How many features does A and E have in common? Okay, which features does A and E have in common that both of them have evolved? They evolved only, the feature number 2 is the only one. I claim that we can, by analyzing these features, we can compute for every pair of species how many features do they have in common. Does everybody sort of agree with that? That should be very easy. Now, suppose I give you a perfect phylogenic tree, okay? Is there a way I can label this thing, the intermediate nodes, such that I get this as its ultrametric distance matrix, okay? And then I can pull the same shenanigans I pulled before, okay, and say solve the ultrametric matrix. Notice, suppose that for every, I take for every pair of leaves, okay, I count, I take its least common ancestor and ask how many features have evolved on the way from it, from the root to it. Let's look at this particular example here. A and C. How many features have evolved on the way from the root to A and C from this particular perfect phylogenic tree? 2 features, right? Okay, that meant the only way that could have happened is because they had 2 features in common, right? How many features are in common between D and C? Well, none of them have evolved before, right? That's why they're on separate wings of the tree completely. Suppose, let's say, I take a given perfect phylogenic tree, I do a breadth first search traversal down the tree, and I label each node with the number, or a depth first search, it doesn't make it, I label each node with the number of features on the path from the root to it. This node gets labeled with 1. This node gets labeled with 2. This node gets labeled with 1. I claim that the root has a weight of 0. The intermediate nodes have weights that go up depending upon how many features get encountered. I claim that the property of this labeling is that on every path from root to leaf, the node, the counts are going up. Does everybody agree with that? The number of features encountered has to be monotonic, because features can only evolve. Okay? So how can I make this an ultrametric tree problem? Well, it almost is an ultrametric tree problem. Now the path numbers on each root are going, on each path are going down. How can I make all those numbers go, on an ultrametric tree problem we talked about, the numbers strictly go up? How do we make those numbers go up? Yeah? You can add the biggest number and subtract. You can negate them. You can do whatever you want. It's not an interesting difference that they all go down rather than they all go up. Okay? So I claim that given this, basically this is the ultrametric matrix. You know, negate it or add the, or subtract the biggest number from it. And so I claim that we can solve the perfect phylogeny problem as another special case of ultrametric trees. Does everybody sort of see that one? I think this is a simpler reduction. This is one that maybe any people should believe. Any questions? Okay, so this ultrametric tree problem, which the first time I heard it sounded kind of weird, okay, in fact is the basis for which we can solve a lot of other natural phylogenic tree problems. Okay? Any questions? That's sort of believable. Okay? Fair enough. So we've shown that we can reconstruct data from distance metrics, measures, or from features, if we assume that there's no errors and that you're giving me perfect data, okay? And if you don't give me perfect data, these problems become relatively hard, relatively fast. Any questions? Okay, good. So what else do we know? What other sort of kinds of algorithms are there when people try to reconstruct evolutionary trees? One thing, kind of data that a lot of evolutionary tree programs work from is something called quartet data. Okay, and this always, when I first saw this, I always found this very confusing. Okay? What biologists will say is that they can analyze species and determine unrooted quartets among four such species. Okay? So here we have four species, human, chimp, gorilla, and orangutan. Okay? And a quartet is basically saying that human, the split from human to chimp, okay, that human is closer to chimp than it is to gorilla or orangutan. Okay? And gorilla is closer to orangutan than it is to human or chimp. Okay? It's an unrooted tree on four species. Okay? I will claim that there are three possible quartets, okay, that you can build with this topology on four species. Namely, somebody, one of these four species is going to have to admit that it's closer to human than it is to the two other monkeys, okay? It could be orangutan, it could be chimp, it could be gorilla. But once you make the decision that human is closer to one of these, that defines the entire quartet. Okay? And apparently it is a reasonable thing for biologists to take a look at four species, okay, and decide among themselves with a certain amount of confidence what is the topology of these quartets. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Any questions? Why don't they use three species? Okay? Why don't they look at the topology of an unrooted tree on three species? Okay. What would the topology of an unrooted tree on three species look like?
Chimp,
that tell you? Absolutely nothing. Okay? There's only one possible uprooted tree on three species, right? So it is not fair for them to talk about triplet puzzling. Okay? Even there is nothing to puzzle about. You get no information about that from a substrate like this. Does everybody sort of agree with that? Now you say, wait a second, you do get information about a rooted substrate. Okay? Let's say that we have, again, human, chimp, gorilla. Okay? A rooted triple does give you information about the ecology of the species. The uprooted triple does not. Okay? So I was always asked by others,
why can't you determine the unrooted triple? Okay, and then just do the rooting from that. And apparently, for whatever reason, they find it difficult to look at three species and say, where was the branching point on these three species first? Okay?
So instead they use this quartet data, okay, on four species. Notice, however, that if they did give you a rooted triplet, you could convert a rooted triplet to an unrooted quartet fairly easily by defining some incredibly far apart species, you know, sort of the null species, okay? And if you have a null species that's split off at the very, very, very beginning of time, okay, if you took any kind of a rooted triple, you could write it as an unrooted quartet where one of the species is a null species. Does everybody sort of agree with that? So I will claim that if you can solve problems
on given a bunch of quartets on species, try to put it together into a consistent tree, okay?
You can solve the problem of given a bunch of rooted triples, put it together in an unrooted tree, okay?
And so this is why a lot of the evolutionary data that people look at comes in. There are a lot of problems of the form. Given a bunch of quartet data, try to put it into a tree such that the tree is consistent with all of those quartets or as many quartets as possible. Okay, and that is another class of tree reconstruction problem. Any questions? Okay. Again, how many quartets are there? Well, by definition, there's n choose 4 quartets that you can form from n species. Typically with this data, okay, you're given a subset of the quartets. You don't look at all four possible species, all n to the fourth possible species, and say, how do they relate? The hope is that maybe you can look at certain subsets of four that you can make a fairly accurate prediction about, you know, and then somehow combine them together to get one consistent tree. Okay? And so there's quartet puzzling class of tree reconstruction problems. Okay? And again, basically what happens is, okay, any questions about this? It seems like a reasonable way to go. Okay? So what is the algorithmic state of these kind of problems? Well, if you give me all the quartets on all the species, and they're all consistent, in fact, I believe it is an efficient algorithm to reconstruct the tree. You don't give me all the quartets, or they're not all consistent, then you start getting into NP-complete kind of a problem. Okay? So again, these tree reconstruction problems tend to all get hard once you start allowing error and trying to maximize them. Any questions? Okay? But what's interesting is, any questions? Okay. So we've looked at really three different kinds of algorithms that you might be able to use to determine trees. Okay? Again, somehow out there is a real one tree, okay, that nature used to evolve, that nature evolved it by. And you want to try to reconstruct what that actual tree is. And we're faced with a problem where there are lots of different algorithms, lots of different kinds of data you can use, and all of them probably give you slightly different answers. Okay? So how can you go from that to try to learn about what the real evolutionary tree is? Okay. Again, the standard software for building evolutionary trees is a package called Phylum, okay, which I know of. that has about 20 or 30 programs in it for building trees. Okay? So there's lots of different programs out there, each of which will give you different trees. Okay? Instead of picking the tree that is best for you, that you like the most, okay, there's another class of algorithms that take in as input a bunch of trees that you think you know, that look reasonable, and then try to identify which tree is most consistent with what you have been given. Okay? And it should be clear that if you're in a world where we have tree reconstruction is hard, there's lots of ways to go about it. This should seem like a reasonable thing to have. A tree that finds a broad algorithm, given a bunch of trees, finds a consensus tree. Okay? Maybe, one that, given as input a bunch of trees, finds the tree such that it respects that in this tree, the branch points, maybe as input I'll be given a bunch of trees on species. I'd like to find a perhaps tree with a smaller number of internal nodes that is consistent with all of them. Okay? Maybe all these trees differ a little bit between where they put mammals and slime molds and things like that. But maybe they all agree that all the warm-blooded animals are on this side and all the cold-blooded animals are on that side. Okay? So a tree compatibility problem would be given as input of many complete trees. Find the largest tree you can that respects all of that such that the statement that you have here would be considered true by all the other trees. Okay? Any questions? And likewise in other approaches,
there's other sort of generalization ideas. Okay? You can look at what you call, instead of consensus trees, you can look at compatibility trees, where I give you as input a bunch of trees which are, let's say, only partially specified. Based on this experimental technique, I can tell the F and the G split off from everybody else first, but I don't know, what happened among, what their relative relationship was among them. Okay, where I know that at this point, the reptile split off, but I don't know anything about where the snake and the turtle and the lizard go. And given a bunch of these trees, such partial trees, if all of these trees are true, all these observations are true, what is the most refined tree that would respect those orders? Okay? And that would also be a reasonable problem. Okay? So any questions? The bottom line is the phylogenetic tree world is filled with lots of algorithms and lots of algorithmic people hanging around, defining various special classes of trees and ways that you can combine them to try to make some sense of things. Any questions? Okay. Next class, we're going to look briefly at one last evolutionary yet another sort of evolutionary approach to getting data about species and how they are ordered. And we're going to do the final end of semester processing. Okay, any questions? Okay, thanks for your attention. Again, for those of you who came late, my dream is that people will turn in their project reports next class. That way you will get brownie points for that. If you don't do that, you can turn it in as late as the final. Okay? But the earlier you get it to me, the happier I will be. Any questions? What? Oh, the final is not going to be held here. To find out where the final is going to be held, come to the next class, and I promise I will tell you. Okay, yes? Can you mail me the thing? Give me a printout of the thing, okay? But mail me everything that you want to mail me, okay? So I want a physical object showing me what your project is, okay? I don't necessarily read your favorite word processing package or anything like that. Okay, you can send me a Word file, but I will not look at it. I want to look at a printout. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Thanks a lot. See you next class. Okay, bye.